This is A Week at WEC, a special series of podcasts celebrating and looking back at the recent 12th World Environmental Education Congress 2024, which was held in Abu Dhabi. My name is Tim Elliott. I'm one of the presenters of the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi podcast series, Naturally Educated, along with my colleague and esteemed co-host, Abdulrahman Al-Zabi. Now, in this season so far, we've heard a great deal from the youth voice at the event. But in this episode, it's time to change direction slightly. In this episode, I'm handing over to Abdulrahman for a truly fascinating conversation with someone who has lived and breathed sustainable development and environmental education since the mid-90s. Miriam Villela is the Executive Director of the Earth Charter International Secretariat and the Centre for Education for Sustainable Development at UPEACE. She's been working with the Earth Charter Initiative since early 1996. She coordinates the UNESCO Chair on Education for Sustainable Development with the Earth Charter and served as a member of the UNESCO Expert Reference Group for the Decade of Education for Sustainable Development. Over the years, she's led and facilitated numerous international workshops, courses, seminars on values and principles for sustainability. Now, prior to her work with the Earth Charter, Miriam worked for the UN Conference on Environment and Development for 2 years in preparation for the 1992 UN Earth Summit and a year at the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. To be honest, it might be a better introduction to just simply say that she's a person who's probably forgotten more than most of us have ever learned about ESD, Education for Sustainable Development. Originally from Brazil, Miriam now lives in Costa Rica, and she flew in specially to attend WEC 2024. Abdulrahman spoke to Miriam on the sidelines of the World Environmental Education Congress and started off by asking her about the Earth Charter.
So I work with Earth Charter International. I have been doing this work since 1996, for a long time. And the Earth Charter is really a document, but it's also a global movement and is an institution. As a document, the Earth Charter offers an ethical framework that articulates the values and principles underlining the vision of sustainability and global citizenship. As a document. If you could compare it with the UN Declaration of Human Rights, that's very focused on human rights. The Earth Charter is focused on sustainability and the notion of responsibility. What is our responsibility towards one another as humans, not only humans from my own country, but humans across the world? So it's this sense of responsibility. So it has this vision of enhancing our capacity to understand what is our responsibility with the well-being of people across the world, but not only people. So it's kind of expanding our consciousness regarding our sense of responsibility with a large living world that goes beyond humans. So the whole narrative and worldview that is articulated in the Earth Charter makes strong emphasis on a not anthropocentric approach, but a more life-centric or eco-centric approach. So that's as a document. But it's also a global movement because we have organizations, schools, universities, NGOs from across the world.
Incredible.
That have embraced the Earth Charter, have adopted it, and say, oh, this is a good ethical reference to work with, or, oh, this is a good educational instrument. And therefore, it's a global movement of educators, young leaders that have been using the Earth Charter as an instrument. And we have an education center that is located in Costa Rica. It's an Earth Charter center on education for sustainable development that is located on the campus of the University for Peace in Costa Rica.
Brilliant.
So I work with that, the global movement, but also in teaching, in education, because the UNESCO adopted two resolutions on the Earth Charter, recognizing the importance of the Earth Charter as an educational instrument and the importance of the Earth Charter as an ethical framework for sustainability. And UNESCO recommends member states to use the Earthshot as an instrument. So we build on that, those two resolutions, one of 2003 and one of 2019.
That's really interesting. And the fact that you put responsibility in the center of everything, I'm sure is a great way to sort of lead the conversation. The fact that some these universities, schools, etc., use your guidance as a guideline to improve their education, to improve the quality of what they provide to their students and audiences and so on. So tell us more about ESD and how does this tilt to, you know, making environmental awareness more of a relevant subject, let's say.
So for me, education for sustainable development, it's similar to different new approaches to education that are all looking for or looking at the role education has in driving social change from an angle of sustainability. Others are from an angle of global citizenship, others from an angle of peace education, for instance, or environment education. So independently of the concept or the terminology that we are using, all these different movements or UNESCO agenda on different approaches to education are looking at the key role education has to transform society, to address the current challenges societies around the world have, right? So for me, education for sustainable development has a particular purpose to ask what is actually the purpose of education overall. Is it just to give knowledge to individuals for their own well-being and sake? Or do we look at the purpose of education as a way to enhance the capacity of the learner to contribute to the betterment of society, you know? Enhance the capacity. One of the key purposes of education should be to prepare the learner to address the current global challenges that we have that are all interrelated. You know, the environmental challenges are related to the social disparities, social injustices, but how to look at that with a systemic approach, with a holistic approach. So I think the opportunity that we have now with ESD, with Education for Sustainable Development, is to help the learner and hopefully the future leaders to see more, to see clear, to have a future vision, and to see this relationship of one challenge with the other, and therefore to address challenges not in with a fragmented approach. So sustainability really requires us to see things through a lens of interrelatedness, long-term approach. Mm-hmm. However, the conventional education system and the practice has been to look at things into boxes. So it's very fragmented. We're all growing and learning, all our upbringing, and even the institutions are organized in a fragmented manner, but also organized a lot in a way to only make us see things with a short-sighted approach. So ESD is really it's an invitation for us to look at the importance for us to expand our views, to see 360 approach, but also with a long-term approach. But I think the key thing here about ESD is that it's not just an education about sustainable development. It's not just an education to look at, oh, here are the ecological problems we have. Is a kind of education to help us see the interrelatedness of the problems, but also not only about the knowledge, but it's about helping us to see the world, the possibilities of turning things around. So that's more or less what I think about ESD and the opportunities that we have nowadays, because there are more, of course, there are more awareness on the current social, environment, economic problems we have and the linkages among them and the need to address that. And it's not only through technology, we need to start with education. Therefore, it's central to prepare future leaders to understand that through a lens of sustainability.
That's true. And I really appreciate the fact that you look at sustainability in a wholesome, multifaceted way, not only environmental, but social, economical, et cetera. There's a lot to unpack here, from addressing ecological problems to highlighting the possibility for a brighter future. Just that, by the way, is incredible, because possibilities require optimism, require a positive outlook to the future, which unfortunately nowadays is a lot of pushback against that. A lot of people do adopt, let's say, negative perspectives of the future when it comes to the environment and sustainability and so on.
And they are frozen, right, in front of the huge challenge.
Exactly.
It's actually a huge problem with education if our learning experience doesn't help us to spark in us creativity, to spark in us, all of us learners, the capacity to envision that a different world is possible.
Absolutely.
And to envision that and work towards that aspiration. So it is very aspirational, but also with the foot on the ground.
And you sort of have to be a shepherd leading the pack towards the possibilities. And I think this is exactly what you do. So let's talk more practical. Give us a glimpse into sort of your everyday challenges that you deal with. And if you have a story to highlight of a person that, or a leadership of an institute, et cetera, that were thinking of something in a different way, not very sustainable, and you kind of shepherd them or led them to something more sustainable.
Okay. So a little bit about the glean. So one is to address this challenge that we think that education for sustainable development is about sustainable development. So that word, that makes a huge difference, right? We're talking about education for an education that will reorient our societies towards sustainability and not about what is sustainability. So that means that we need to look at engineering, law, business, language, like across the curriculum. It's not just in one side of our learning. So that's a big challenge that we have when we're trying to really look at education for sustainable development as a driver for social change, to make people see that it's a cross-cutting thing in an educational setting, not just a subject, not just an extra, a course about sustainability. Mm. So it's a big change, you know?
It's not a sideline subject. It's not something you put as an add-on. It's actually part of the main thing.
Yeah. So in terms of the work we do, before I go into a specific story.
Sure.
We use the Earth Charter as an instrument to help us understand a very broad perspective of sustainability, to help us see the foundations. You know, actually, charter, the word charter is like in the good old days, people used charter as a map, like the captain of a boat used a charter before GPS. And all the digital things we have nowadays, they used a charter, so it's a map, to find directions, you know, where we are, where we want to go, the charter in that sense. And the UN used the word charter also to envision the foundation of an institution. So what could be the foundation of a more just, sustainable and peaceful world? So the Earth Charter offers the underlying values and ethics, an Earth ethic, to guide us towards that. So just to clarify the idea of charter, where it comes from, no? It has this notion of giving direction, but also giving a foundation, you know, to something. Like if you have a house, the bigger the house is, or the taller the building is, the more you're going to think on the foundations of that building, right? Mm-hmm. It needs to be strong foundation. So we are looking at the Earth Charter as an instrument that offers a strong ethical foundation for the vision of this aspiration of a more just, sustainable, and peaceful world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's how we look at the Earth Charter. There are key ideas in it, such as we belong to an Earth community.
Mm.
So normally all of us, we go to school and we are taught to see our sense of belonging to the country where we are born, right? So it's kind of a nationalism thing that is embedded in our upbringing, which is okay. But we learn less about our sense of belonging to an Earth community, right?
That's
we
true.
Spend more time in that sense of I belong to, and I have rights and responsibilities within my country. But if we expand our consciousness that we, I belong to a country, but we also belong to a bigger community that's not only about humans, but it's the large living world of non-humans. We call it the community of life. So when we say, what's community of life? What comes to our mind? And when we invite people to think we belong to a nurse community, as humans, we're not alone here. Mm-hmm. We're not alone even within our countries. Mm. So if we have that lens of a sense of belonging to a larger community of humans and non-humans, the large living world, then the question is, what is our ethical responsibility in terms of what I give, what I take? What's my ethical responsibility with the well-being, not only of my people, but the larger community that I belong to? So that's a core idea that we find there in the Rishchatter, and the narrative that the Rishchatter, the as an instrument, wants to stimulate. I say instrument because, again, talking about like the use of a compass, you know, why do we use a compass? What is the purpose of a compass? A compass is very useful when you are lost, you know, lost in the middle of the ocean or in a forest or in the desert. You use a compass to help you navigate and give you some direction where we are, and it helps you to make decisions. But if you look at the Rishchatter, it can serve as an ethical compass to inform your decisions, to inform your actions in a way that you'll be looking at it through those lenses of care and responsibility to a larger community. So I see this as an instrument to help us expand our consciousness.
Fair enough.
With regards to who we are, how do we relate to one another as humans, but also how do we relate to the large living world?
Mm. You know, a word comes to mind when you explain the reasons behind the charter and what it means is it requires sort of a paradigm shift for a lot of people, right? They need to rethink some of the foundations of how we think and how we relate to other humans and other living forms around the world, right?
It's like changing your glasses.
Yeah.
I'm used to see things through a glasses of anthropocentric, human-centric, and my own well-being and benefit or the benefit of my society. And if you change those glasses and you have new glasses that expand your views.
That's true.
Through different lenses.
That's brilliant. Yeah, what a good way to put it. I wonder if such paradigm shift, from your perspective, would you say it comes intuitively, or you think the Earth Charter has to sort of infiltrate that thinking? And
it depends on where we are, the context that we live. I do think we need to be very explicit, give a little bit more direction, have an intention, like the education cannot be values free. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a specific example. I have a student who came from India to Costa Rica. So she came when she was maybe 23 years old. She was doing her, actually more, maybe 25, 4. Mm. She was doing her master's. And she came to Costa Rica. She did an internship with us. She's from Kerala. Her name is Greshma. And she was very interested in peace education. So that's why she came to Costa Rica, peace education. Then she found the Earth Charter and says, oh, she started seeing the relationship between peace building and peace education and sustainability. So she was the first bridge she made, right? Expanding the thinking. Oh, peace is not isolated there in one place and sustainability is in another room. But then in Costa Rica was the first time she met a Pakistani. And after a year, she came to me and said, Miriam, I had to come all the way to Costa Rica to change my views and assumptions regarding a Pakistani.
Wow.
Because I was born in India, and where I grew up, the information that I was receiving was only around a narrative that Pakistani are bad people. And she engaged with her chat as an instrument, like question her assumptions, question her own worldviews, and as an instrument of dialogue while she was doing her internship with us. So she really got a big shift of worldviews and values through her learning with us. She went back to India and she established a sort of online dialogue with teenagers, precisely to address this sort of importance of a multicultural, intercultural learning, making bridges between the peace and sustainability, ecological protection and peace and sustainability. So Dhrushchara certainly in her experience with us was a valuable experience. So coming back to your question, can it be intuitively? Maybe. But again, it depends, I think, on how we are relating to the context where we are. Yeah, it depends on our connections we make in the context where we are. If you are in a context that doesn't help you make those connections, it'll be harder.
That's exactly what I was thinking. We talk a lot in this podcast about how we can relate to how our grandparents used to live. And if we compare and contrast both these two lives, they probably lived more sustainably. They were probably more conservational. And especially here in the UAE, a lot of people dependent on the palm tree, for example. If you go to cities like Fujairah, a bit in the north, you can see and sense real ways people used to, let's say, go and fish. They would use palm fronds. They're the leaf where the leaves of the palm sit, and they would gather these fronds, and then they would go and fish. They didn't have materials to build a boat, for instance, you know. But this brings me back to this conference specifically. WIC brings a lot of institutions, schools, pupils, you know, world leaders like yourself when it comes to the Earth Charter, and institutes like the UN and so on and so forth, make people have these conversations. Brings people together. And so I want to understand from your perspective, what does this conference happening in a country like the UAE mean to you? And what do you see coming out of this event?
It is a big question, but you started with a nice comment about the context here where we are, which actually sparked my curiosity to go and see things. And thank you for that. But when I was hearing you, the word that came to my mind was disconnection. I think this is one of the biggest challenges we have in our world, that is that we are more and more disconnected. You started by seeing our disconnection with our past and with our history. So that's one disconnection. We also have disconnection with nature. We think we are here and nature is there, but no, nature is within us. Mm-hmm. Because we need water in our body. We need food and energy, right? We need even clothes. And anyway, we need microphones. So everything that is around us comes from nature. So it's in us, but we think, no, it's there. So there's a misperception, illusion that we are disconnected from nature. But I think it's what's in our psyche. So it's disconnection with our past, disconnection. We feel disconnected. And we need to address that and connect us more. I see like bridges, mm-hmm. past, present, future, like looking at the past, looking at my present, and look at my responsibility with future generations. So these bridges. So that's one thing. In terms of the conference, I think it's valuable. I certainly came here not only for the Congress, but mm-hmm. for the fact that the Congress is here. I've never been in this country, the Emirates, and I was certainly very interested because I think the world needs more of all of us learning from one another, from our different contexts, our different cultures. What's the tree? Or what's the animal? From here, mm-hmm. what's the main birds that we can find in my country, you know, is the scarlet macaws or it's mm-hmm. the sloth, you know. So just by me mentioning scarlet macaw or sloth in your mind, you have to think about this. Or maybe if you mention camel, oh yes, mm-hmm. we have camels. So it's kind of, it's enlightened in my mind, in my imagination, mm-hmm. A different context. So I was very curious to come here. I have to confess, I've been to several congresses, but I'm happy. Yeah, I was very happy that it was here first, because it gives us an opportunity not only to go to know what's going on inside the Congress, But see, the context where the Congress is, so mm-hmm. the country, the people, you know, that are here, the culture. So I think that's one valuable thing about this. I learned already from the first day and the second day and the third day, and now in the last day, that I have to look at my own assumptions. I was very impressed to see so many women in the leadership position in the Emirates. They were all in the plenaries, in the different plenaries, not only in the opening plenary. Not only outspoken women, but sitting in leadership positions in a very empowerment. So I think that for me, I would take home as, you have to go and see. You cannot speak from outside, you know. You have to go and see from your, with your eyes and really experience the place. It's such a very valuable learning experience. And of course, the connections, getting to know people who are doing similar work that we do. I met someone from Kenya that was in our one of my we do teacher training. We do an online certificate program on education for sustainable development. We have been doing that for years under the framework of our UNESCO chair on education for sustainable development.
Okay.
So we do an online program for us professional development. And by coincidence, there was someone, imagine, never saw, only my course, from Africa, from Kenya.
Wow.
And we met here as a coincidence. So for me, that's incredibly, it's very valuable.
I want to hear your thoughts as a final question regarding the involvement of youth in such conference. Do you see there is a particular attention that is paid to youth within this Congress?
Yeah, I mean, we saw youth, and I think it's important, very important. In the Earth Charter, we also have a principle on youth empowerment, on the importance to empower youth and hear youth engage. In my own work for the past 25 years, we also have a program, a youth program. It's called, and the purpose of that is to ensure we have the future leaders have an ethical lens. So the purpose of our program is to enhance the capacity of learners, the young people, to be ethical leaders, understanding the broad vision of sustainability that is articulated in their charter. So it's called Leadership, Sustainability and Ethics course, that then we invite the young leaders to continue to be engaged in different ways, international conferences, going to UN, but also mostly be engaged in seeing how they can transform, help influence the betterment of their local communities. So I think it's not only important to bring youth, have a youth participation in such conferences, but also to give voice, and more than that, to ensure we have more intergenerational dialogues. Sometimes I hear we are going to give youth the floor, or we are going to teach them, but the learning is more in a horizontal way. We need to, again, change the lenses, that learning doesn't necessarily only take place in a vertical manner, but in a horizontal manner, in terms of exchange and learning in an intergenerational dialogue setting. So I think having the intention to make space for youth engagement is very important. And yeah, we have seen this.
Education for Sustainable Development, Change, Global Citizenship, and the Interconnected Nature of Each, and Why and How Education is About Far More Than Just Imparting Knowledge. Miriam Valela, Executive Director of the Earth Charter International Secretariat, speaking to Abdulrahman Al-Zabi from Naturally Educated at the recent World Environmental Education Congress in Abu Dhabi. Next time, we'll be talking about ESD, Education for Sustainable Development, content in Arabic, with three guests and a ukulele.